Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to LSEC Radio. This is your host, Teresa Banks, and it is good to be back on the air. The past few weeks have truly had me with a lot going on. One thing I've had going on is I have been battling the flu, so please excuse this raspy voice of mine and a few pauses I may have to do during today's program to kind of catch my breath and sip a little water to keep it going. Another thing that I have been doing is participating in jury duty service. So I thought, why not create a show and talk about what it's like to serve during jury duty? So needless to say, that is today's topic matter. Now, I have to tell you that here in the state of Illinois, there are two different ways that you may have to be selected for jury duty. You may receive a notice that says you are a standby juror, or you may get a notice that says, honey, bring your butt right on in. Well, the first time I had to serve for jury duty, I received the latter. Jury duty summons is said to come right in. This last time, a couple of weeks ago, I received a standby jury duty notice. And with the standby notice, what you have to do is call in the night before that you are supposedly to report, usually about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the evening, to find out whether or not you actually have to come in or not. So, you know, I'm watching the clock all day, and I'm trying to see whether or not I have to come in. And at 4:30, I make the phone call, and I find out, yes, indeed, I have to come in the next day for jury duty service. So what you have to do if you do have to come in is you have to fill out the back of the summons, and it's usually about a half-page document you have to complete. And on the document, you're giving your basic information, your name, address, city, state, zip, phone number. You're telling them the number of people that are in your household, whether or not you served on a jury before, and if so, where. And you're telling them if you've ever been convicted of a crime before and if you are a U.S. citizen. So you fill out all of this information, and then on the day that you are to go in for jury duty service, you go to the courthouse. You have to make your way through the metal detector. That's always an interesting experience. Some people can go through that a lot better than others. And then you make your way to whatever floor, whatever room that is to be the juror waiting room. And you turn in your half-page document. You're given a slip of paper that has a panel number on it, and you're given a little badge that says juror. And then you sit and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. Now, fortunately, you're one who heeded the warning that said that you should bring something to read with you or something to do. So usually I bring newspapers or I bring my BlackBerry or bring something with me so that I have something to entertain myself. And then this time around, I also brought snacks with me because I figured, why should I pay to get food out of the vending machine? Some people brought their laptops and other people had their iPads. I mean, people seem to have a number of different things to keep themselves busy. Now, while you're sitting in the room, you're not just totally sitting and waiting the whole time. At some point, at some point, a training video comes on, and you hear about the work that one does as a juror. So you're watching this video. Some people kind of ignore it. I guess if they served before, they don't need the information. And others take a look at it, and they review it in full. After the training video, eventually your panel number will be called. So I'm sitting around and I'm just thinking it'll be like last time, it'll be hours into it before my panel number is called, and a gentleman sitting next to me strikes up a conversation, asks if I've served before, and we start chit-chatting about this and that. And before I know it, I mean, actually I think only about an hour went by before my panel number was called. And actually, it was interesting because the person I had been chatting with had the same panel number. So we're swept up with a number of other people, and we are taken to a courtroom by a sheriff. And this tries the patience, I guess, of the average person because it's another sit-and-wait game. So you go to the courtroom. You are waiting around as each individual person is asked a series of questions while in the courtroom. Some are asked while sitting in the jury box, and then others are rotated out eventually, and they are replaced by the remaining jurors that are then asked questions. And usually you go in about 36 people at a time. And, of course, the jury box can only hold about 12 to about 15 people at a time, counting the alternates. So you're listening to these questions. Sometimes they get personal in regards to where you live and some of the things you've placed already on your half-page juror form. And some of the questions are kind of silly. Like one of the lawyers asked, do you have a bumper sticker on the back of your car? And I was one who kind of laughed when I heard that because I actually have two bumper stickers on my car. One that says, that a well-behaved woman seldom makes history. And another one that says, if there's a will, put me in it. So it was just funny. You know, I guess it kind of takes a little of the anxiousness off when you answer some of the more silly questions. But you go through this question-answer period, as I said, one person at a time. What I think is most amusing about that is the number of responses that people have to the questions from those that really don't want to participate and be a juror. Like there was one person that had every ailment you could think of, just too sickly to ever possibly serve. Another gentleman said he has ADD, attention deficit disorder. Another person said that he could barely hear anything. And then after the lawyers left out and the judge left out, then, of course, he could hear everything. You know, he's talking to the person next to him, et cetera. Another woman said that she couldn't understand English. So it was just so funny. You're listening to all these different excuses that people allegedly have, and, of course, you're thinking it's because they don't want to serve. And I'm one that wants to serve. You know, I mean, I feel it's our duty to serve and be a part of the juror and try to be one of the peers that hears the case to hopefully, you know, do things in a right way and give a responsible answer to a case on if a person is guilty or not. The only time I would not serve is if I were in a state where one could get the death penalty and be put to death. I would never serve under that particular condition. But under all other conditions, I really don't have a problem with it. So after you go through the question-answer period, as I just said, the lawyers then step away. They go out the room along with the judge and the sheriff, and you're just sitting around with your fellow jurors. and you're waiting until they return. And once they get back, they have now made their official selections. And those that are selected have to stay. The others are then dismissed, and they leave, and they go back to the waiting room for the jurors, and they go through the whole process again until the end of the day. And if by the end of the day they have not been selected on a juror, you have officially served, if you will, for at least a year. You won't be called back or get a summons for a year in our state. So if you're one who does have to stay, as was my case, you then get instructions from the judge. You're told the next day when you are to return and a report and the kind of things that you can bring with you, like your cell phone. You are told that you'll be given a notebook where you can take notes as you hear the case, and you are to turn that notebook in. You can't take it out with you at the end of each day. We were provided with a continental breakfast and snacks throughout the day and also a lunch. And I was excited because it was the first time I had a veggie burger when I served this time around as a juror. And we were also informed that we would be given breaks as well. Now, when I served before, our breaks were still in the jury room. We literally could not leave that room the entire time. But this time around, with our breaks, we could actually leave the building if we want. Sometimes we're given an hour. Sometimes we had 2 hours for our official breaks and for our lunch breaks. So that was actually pretty cool this time around to have more space and freedom to leave the room, to leave the court area, and to move around. Now, while you're serving as a juror, and as it's explained to you when you are watching the training video, you're told of how the process is going to work, that you'll hear opening statements presented by the lawyers, that you will hear the plaintiff's witnesses and then the defendant's witnesses, and then you'll hear closing statements. And then the judge will give you instructions on what to do, and then you are to deliberate. And prior to that, prior to being given those instructions by the judge, you are not to discuss the case in any way, whether it be amongst yourselves or definitely with your family members. Now, this particular case that I was on was really something else. I mean, long story short, the plaintiff was making the case that she went to her doctor, the defendant, with poison ivy. And she needed some relief from it. She had little bumps on her fingers. She had them on her right elbow. And what her doctor chose to do was to give her shots in those places, a bunch of shots, an unknown number of shots, with a drug called Kenalog that was mixed with two other drugs. Now, a number of different witnesses came through for the plaintiff, probably about 9 in total, saying that, you know, Kenalog was too aggressive of a move, of a method, that, you know, in a couple of days, the poison ivy would have just went away on its own. There were other things that could have been used, other medications. And her one lawyer presented a great case for her. And then the doctor had probably about 3 witnesses. She had 2 lawyers. And to me, she didn't really put up much of a fight. She really didn't even seem empathetic. As she was talking about what had happened, it seemed like she took poor notes on what the patient's condition was and how serious it was to have tried to justify her actions and doing what she did. But as it turns out, in giving the patient all these different shots, specifically the shots at the elbow area across an area called the ulnar nerve, kind of the funny bone as we know it, there was something called atrophy that occurred, and it was kind of a degeneration, if you will, of the fat and the muscle tissue in the area. The plaintiff, therefore, wound up having surgery on her elbow that left a scar, and she then had to have another surgery to remove a keloid. So it was really a case that was something else. I mean, on the surface, it seemed kind of cut and dry to me that the doctor had done wrong. And, you know, in the end, you had to figure out a number of things in regards to the case. So once we heard all of this, you know, we heard everything in regards to it, and we receive the instructions from the judge and we had to deliberate, that's when you really find out what people are made of. I mean, we had to look at this case and we had to say, okay, is the doctor guilty or innocent? And the first time we took our initial vote, we had 9 people that felt the doctor was definitely guilty. We had 2 people that were undecided and one person that thought she was definitely guilty. And at that point, the alternates are dismissed. They're not in there deliberating. So it didn't take long for all of us to come to a consensus that the doctor was guilty. But then we had the challenge of trying to figure out some monetary award to give to the plaintiff. And therein lied really a serious challenge. The plaintiff was to get a certain dollar amount for her scar, a certain dollar amount for the pain and suffering that she had went through, and a certain dollar amount for her loss of how she could have functioned in life in the future. So, of course, some people are thinking, you know, it's not that big of a scar. Maybe give her nothing. Other people thought, no, you know, give her a couple of thousand. She can't dress the way she would want to dress. Same thing with pain and suffering. I mean, how do you assess how much a person has truly been pained or how much they've suffered over a number of years? And in this woman's case, it had been well over 10 years, I think 13 years. She had gone through all of this, you know, surgery and hurting and dealing with the doctor. And then one's future. I mean, how do you put some kind of dollar figure on the impact of a more limited use of one's elbow? Her fingers, fortunately, didn't have issues at all. But limited use of one's elbow as they're trying to function in the future in life. So it was really something else. And we had thought, as we were hearing the case, you know, going on, and from what was told to us by the lawyers early on, before we discussed everything, we had thought that we'd be given more specific guidelines. Like we would be told on average for a person's scar, typically you'd award $10,000 to $30,000, for example. So we had absolutely no guidelines to go with whatsoever. And there were some people that wanted to award this woman, the plaintiff, well over $1 million. And I was one where, you know, I don't have a hang-up in regards to how much a person should be awarded. You know, I don't envision a cap. And we were told all of her medical bills had been covered. So I'm just thinking to myself, I need justification in my head to give her certain dollars. And some people just felt, you know, give her whatever she asked for, period. But, you know, you're sitting in court, and you're watching a person who says that, you know, they have limited use of this and that, and they can't function like they could before. And I'm watching this plaintiff, and so are a number of other jurors that mention this too. And we're watching her, and she's not favoring that elbow. She's not appearing to be in serious pain in writing and using her hand. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, if you were in serious pain, where you don't know when the pain could come on in regards to your elbow, in regards to your hand, you're not going to be constantly writing, especially in front of a juror, number of jurors, you know, the whole jury. You're going to be maybe kind of, you know, laying back, sitting back a little bit on your chair, writing maybe with your left hand, scribbling some things down, and kind of favoring, like I said, the elbow, kind of nursing it a little bit, as if you are truly concerned that you could have a reoccurrence any minute. And there are some jurors, they felt they didn't have an issue with that because they believed she had learned to live with it. But I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, I really don't know about this. So needless to say, we did have to come up with some numbers, and we did have to eventually go out there. I was chosen as the foreman. And so I had to read off what we decided. And before we leave the room up where all the jurors are, you have to sign the paper, either the guilty paper or the not guilty document. So we all read through it. We put down the different figures we wanted to award her, which included a total. and then we all individually signed it. And then we had to ring a bell that was inside the room to summons the sheriff, and he then informed the judge on the other side of the room and the lawyers. You know, it took a while, probably about a half hour to an hour, to get everybody back to the courtroom. And then we were brought back out, and I read off in standing our decision. And I think the plaintiff looked happy. I think all of us were relieved that our work was done and we had fulfilled our service. And then we were all asked to come back into the jury room for a short while. And then after being there for a couple of minutes, we were led to the judge's chambers, and it was pretty cool. We had an opportunity to talk with him. And I, you know, I'm one who asked a lot of questions. And so I asked the question, you know, if we had seen something in the jury, while we are in the jury, if we had seen something in the court that the plaintiff was doing, are we permitted to use that, as opposed to if we had seen it outside of the courtroom? And the judge said, yes, we could. So I was happy about that, because that helped me feel that in being one of the ones charging for a lower award for this plaintiff, that was a part of the decision, that she had done various actions in the courtroom that I thought was kind of inappropriate considering what she was saying her condition was. And, you know, we asked just a number of different questions among us, and then we were given certificates of thanks for us being there, for us serving. We're also given our last check. When you're serving on jury duty every day, you're given some kind of stipend. In our case, it was a whole $17.20, which, you know, if you're still working and your employer is covering your pay while you are in jury duty and serving, then that's kind of a little bonus, you know, to supplement maybe gas money or transportation money. But there are actually some jurors there where they were not getting paid, and I felt really bad for them that $17.20 was their pay for the day. So that wasn't really a good thing. Seems like the court should either dismiss you and not make you have to serve or make up for your income loss. But at any rate, we're given the certificates. We're given the last check. And then before we left, we were told we could sit if we wanted to and talk with the lawyers. And I thought that was great, because I was thinking to myself and going through this process, how do the lawyers learn? You know, how do they get feedback? I mean, if you're on a high-profile case, then typically the jurors will be questioned by the media, and the lawyers can learn that way what they did wrong, because the jurors are vocal about here's what moved me and here's what didn't. So it was great having an opportunity to sit a while, a couple of minutes with the lawyers, and to answer their questions as to how their case went. And overall, to me, it just felt like the evidence was so overwhelming on the side of the plaintiff that the bottom line was it was just a matter of how much we were going to give to her. So I think on the defense side, if they had come up with maybe more people to justify giving a person serious injections of Kenalog and the other mixture of the two other medications with the Kenalog, then it would have been harder to make a decision. But they didn't do that. And the other side, the plaintiff's side, made such a compelling case with all these professionals that were serious surgeons in the field that said either they would never have used the Kenalog, or more than likely, more often than not, it was what caused the excessive damage to the plaintiff's elbow. I mean, that just really kind of made up our minds. So it was a wonderful experience. We didn't argue too much as a group of jurors, and it was actually kind of fun, because prior to having to deliberate, we played games every day. We talked every day. We were a diverse group, so you had a chance to hear different attitudes, get different opinions. There were a couple of people that were late on more than one occasion and coming to court every day. And, you know, one thing about jury duty is they cannot start a case without you. You have to be there every day. And on the very last day, I guess they were fed up with this one gentleman that had been late every day. They had told him and all of us, you know, one thing that the judge could do is have the sheriff come to your house and get you. So, and have a case against you. So, you know, we're all sitting there thinking, you know, I never want that to happen. And perhaps he should have exercised that right earlier on in the week. But we're all just glad at that point it was over. But in a way, it was kind of sad because it felt as if you're kind of making new friends. And it was fun to just play all these different games with strangers. We played a game called Jenga, kind of a stacking, blocking type game. And we played another game, Apples to Apples, which was a lot of fun. So it was really an interesting experience and one that I actually highly recommend that everyone try and participate in. The only downside, though, that I will admit to is that as you're serving on a jury, there is a possibility that you could be sequestered. And the very first time I had to serve, I was sequestered. And it's interesting because the day before you may be sequestered, they give you this document that says if you're on any kind of medication, make sure that you bring at least a 2-day supply. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, whatever, whatever, you know, not really taking it serious. And the day, last day, we could not, as a jury, come up with a final decision. And I'm not talking about with the poison ivy case. I'm talking about another case I was on before serving this year, a case I was on 3 years ago. We couldn't make up our minds on a verdict. And so as a result, we were told we would be sequestered. And honey, they swoop you up without question. They took all of our cell phones. They led us to a bus. We felt like criminals. They placed us on the bus, and they took us to some hotel somewhere. We didn't even know where we were. A couple of people said they needed some items from the store, and so you were led to the store. You had a sheriff to go with you. We had another sheriff that remained with the rest of us at the hotel who did not go. We were fed dinner, and then after we received the dinner, we were led to rooms that we had to share with fellow jurors, about 2 people to a room. And there was a sheriff outside the door of the floor that we were on the whole night, we were told. And then in the morning, we were fed breakfast, and then we were driven by bus back to the courthouse. And honey, by then, I tell you what, I bet you we came up with a decision after being sequestered. It was quite an experience, and I was fortunate in that one of my eye medications for glaucoma I did not have with me, and I had made a last call before they took my cell phone asking my spouse to bring that medicine, and he was so sweet that he brought me a few extra things, you know, underwear, soap, and a couple extra things that some of the other jurors didn't have, so that was pretty cool. So as I wrap up today's show, I think the moral, again, of the story is that you should serve on jury duty. It's not that bad. There are other things that are worse in life to do, so next time around, please consider it. With that said, in a couple of days, this upcoming Wednesday, in fact, I'm going to talk about a new hobby I have been indulging in, jewelry making. And I want to thank those of you that have already purchased some of my jewelry. Thank you for your support. I want to remind all of you that all 4 of my books are still on Amazon.com, and they would make for a wonderful holiday gift. You could purchase Woman of Integrity, Barrenhood, Becoming a Published Author, and Surviving a Layoff, and all of those books are reasonably priced. Pick up your copies today. I do have a new book that's coming out in 2013, and I will tell you it will have a religious base to it. And I can't wait. I haven't put out a book in a while. And as I head towards 2013, I look forward to doing more book events, which will also include more jewelry events as well. I want to thank all of you, as always, for listening to today's program, for giving me your feedback through email. My email address is mailtobanks@aol.com, spelled M-A-I-L, the number 2, B as in boy, A-N-K-S, @aol.com. I look forward to hearing. I wish all of you a happy holiday season. Until we speak again or type again, take care all, and may God bless you and your family.